Diplomatic Team Talks Fell Apart. When Jean-Luc Picard got shot in the heart, Dr. Beverly Crusher says he's in arrest. It's time for Delancey to act his best. This week at Sci-Fi Melody, we watch Next Gen Tapestry, an episode from season 6. And Scott's meeting will chime, cause he's seen at least 1,000 times. We'll see where Picard could have tread when Q sees him when he's dead. We'll see where Picard could have tread when Q sees him when he's dead.
Sci-Fi Melody, Symptom 138, Tapestry. Well, I guess it could have been Symptom 138. Flowers? Is there a John Luck Picard here?
That would be the title in parentheses.
I feel like that's my favorite line of this episode because it's just the most memorable
you
one.
You put
it's
it
just
in the
so
month
goofy.
Intro. Of yeah. course it's good.
Flowers?
And he comes in at the most inconvenient time, too.
Oh, yeah. It's time to go, hey, remember, you're a cat at this point.
I'm not sure if that's my favorite line or just that's fantastic. But then there's a real subtle one where Picard's telling him the story and he looks and goes, touching story. Get you right here. And he just like, double taps yeah. his heart yep. for a second. Right. It's just, man, it's fantastic.
You know, is it just me or did John Delancey do someone look up the Johnny Cabs from Total Recall? It sounded just like the guy who did that when he did the flowers. Like who played Johnny Cabs in Total Recall?
Well, I can look that up, but
It just bugged me. I can't believe I didn't think about looking it up right now.
I don't see that it's him. He is Discord in My Little Pony.
Oh, that's that's really what I needed to hear.
Yeah. Oh, you're not a brony?
No, I'm not.
You don't understand that?
I grew up.
That whole thing?
I grew up.
Okay.
So anyway, you know, and I think with that episode that I am right about this 1,000th time you've seen this.
Yes, this is one of the episodes that I will watch over and over and over again, and it's an episode that has grown on me as I have aged, go figure. Tapestry, episode 15 of season 6. Written by Ronald D. Moore, one of the greats of the Next Gen writing room. Directed by Les Landau, who directed episodes of Next Gen from season 1 all the way through the end. I think Les Landau might have directed Measure of a Man, but off the top of my head, I'm not entirely positive. I'll fact check myself on that. You got the great John Delancey returning as Q in his 7th appearance as Q. I believe this is the only episode that involves Q, aside from Encounter at Farpoint, that doesn't have Q in the title as a little bit of trivia. Most of the Q episodes would be like Q who,
Q squared.
Yeah. Well, that was a great novel, Q squared.
Oh, yeah, right. That was a novel. Whoops.
Yep. But usually they identify to you that Q is going to be in it. But let's just jump right into this as to why I chose this episode. Obviously, I think it is one of the great humanist messages that Next Generation will produce about and studying the nature of humanity, the nature of our lives, and how we are the sum of our actions and the sum of our decisions, and that, you know, as much as we'd like to go through and eliminate the bad decisions, we need those to form our personality and our life view to allow us to make the good choices later that bring us to who we are. We can't be who we become if we can go back and get rid of our regrets. It's fantastic in that regard. But more than that is, I think you see both the character of Jean-Luc Picard and Q displayed at its finest moments in this episode. And you also see, I would say this is, I said that the reason in the supplemental, I said the reason Q who didn't make the top 4 is there is a better Q episode that did. And this is that episode in my mind. I think this is the best iteration of the Q character, and I think it's where Delancey has shown that he has really mastered this character.
Well, they do play off of each other very well.
You know who he reminds me of a little bit? Loki.
Yes.
Yes.
He's like a Loki character, definitely, because he's not exactly Loki, because Loki also likes to spread discord because he thinks it's fun. And whether he resolves it or not, because he has a heart, he's not sure. But Q clearly would... It's almost like he wants to help, but there's that part of inside of him saying, I just want to screw with these people. And I would say that the thing stopping him would be Picard. Because Picard keeps passing his tests of morality and dignity to the point where he's like, you are an anomaly, miss. You are an anomaly, sir. I am not going to carry out my full screwing with you plan because you yourself are such an anomaly that I find you amusing. It's almost like that. Like, he can't, you know, that's an argument a lot of people have about Next Gen is it's all too perfect. It's all too perfect. Well, yeah, that's the idea. It's supposed to be showing what if our humanism actually panned out. And I think that's, you saw that with Kirk. Kirk, he still had some flaws. Picard, his flaws are caring too much. Or at the point of the show, he's learned from his flaws. And I think that Q is so flabbergasted to find a human that incidentally actually learns from it and has grown. It's one of those, you are one of the more interesting people I've ever met, Picard.
Well, you know, and I'm going to do the real bare bones recap of this so that we can get into
song.
Exactly. Essentially, Captain Picard's coming back from a diplomatic mission. He gets shot in the heart, and while Beverly Crusher's trying to save his life, Q meets him and says, "You're dead. You're in the afterlife. I'm God." Says you died because your artificial heart, gives him a chance to go back and change something.
Which, I'm sorry to interrupt, Jack, but Picard shows chutzpah here when he's like, "You're not God."
Yes.
I mean, he's telling this being that whether he's God or not, he's shown himself to have omnipresent, omnipotent powers and the ability to just snap his fingers and create almost. And he's like, "You're not God." I mean, that might be another reason Q respects him. Like, you have the balls to tell me to my face I'm not that great.
Yeah.
Wow, you're interesting.
This is one of these things that I really like about this episode, too, because this has got to be Picard's worst nightmare. He dies, he gets to the afterlife, and Q says, "Surprise, Jean-Luc, I'm God."
Yeah, it's like, the guy I've been fighting with for how long is now, "Hi, welcome to death.
I refuse to believe the universe is so poorly designed."
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, and if you're correct me if I'm wrong, they're immortal, basically, the Qs.
Yes, yeah.
So, he's an immortal being, which means finding enjoyment for him is difficult. Because he can snap his fingers and have almost anything he wants, and he's immortal. So, to find someone that not only embodies everything he says he should, but then to look him in the face and go, "You're not God. You're not that great. You're not." If the universe were run by you, everything would be horrible. That's almost hilarious.
You know, there's more to this. Like in the second Q episode, Q shows up and in Hiding Q, and Picard is quoting Shakespeare to him, and I think it's Hamlet where he says, How like a god, you know, how noble is man?" And Q slams the book shut and goes, "Surely you don't see yourself like this." And he said, "I see us becoming that one day." But the rest of the recap is Q gives Picard a chance to go back and change a moment where he got stabbed through the chest in his artificial heart. If he cannot get stabbed through the chest, he'll live. He lives. He doesn't like the man he becomes. He's a junior grade lieutenant, and he's bereft of passion, as he says in his closing speech. Yeah. And Picard says, "Put me back, and if I have to die, that's fine. I'd rather die the way I lived than this way, and live a little longer."
His life was boring. Boring.
So let's skip to the reason I chose this episode. I said it's the finest iteration of Q in my mind. It's a great portrayal of Patrick Stewart, and it's in a nutshell a lot of what we're trying to talk about, where humanity is going in the future. But let's get into the role of Q. Q is one of the most fascinating characters I think you find in science fiction. And I've always said there is an oddity and an insanity to this, because this is Gene Roddenberry, who is at this point in time a full-on humanist. There is no God. Humanity is its own God. It doesn't need that to move forward and be successful. And in fact, freeing yourself from notions of religion is part of what drives you forward. Next Generation is an insanely humanistic show. That's its bent. It's more so than TOS, where Roddenberry appeased the networks with lines like, "We find the one to be sufficient," so that they could hide the humanism behind that. Oh, but even though they've moved this way, they've decided on one God. In Next Gen, Roddenberry's just gone beyond that. However, Q is God. For all intents and purposes, Q is omnipotent and immortal and omniscient.
But this makes sense, because if you're trying to show a humanist bend and you make a God character and your main guy tells him, "You're not God, we are capable of getting there," that's almost like that's almost what Roddenberry wants to say, that even if you put a God in front of us, we would somehow equal, surpass him, or just find a way not to need him.
Now, Roddenberry is supposed to say, and the view on this is, it's not God. He's a higher being that has evolved, and we will get there one day. It will continue evolving, and millions of years or billions of years down the road, we'll become like Q2. And we'll be able to get there. All the Q is a mortal species that evolved into this omnipotence and omniscience. But it's still kind of, it's just very interesting for this secular humanist to write the character of God into his show. But the reason I say that this is the finest iteration of Q, throughout Next Gen, his one episode on DS9 and his appearances on Voyager, you see Q in different ways. In Encounter at Farpoint, he appears as the omnipotent judge who's going to put humanity on trial. And he's not humanity's friend here. He's testing humanity. He's humanity's adversary. In Hiding Q, he's simply there as a trickster. He's completely Loki. He's going to test Will Riker by giving him the power of the Q. He kidnaps the crew into a war game scenario. And there's no real purpose of this. He's made a bet with the Continuum that he can lure Riker with the power of the Q. And he makes a bet with Picard that he can lure Riker away.
Pretend someone doesn't know what the Continuum is.
The Q Continuum is a realm where all of the Q live. And it's separate from normal space, and it's outside of time. And from the Q Continuum, you can jump into any point in time or space that you choose.
Do we know of any hierarchy amongst the Qs?
There is supposedly no hierarchy amongst the Q. It's a thing of equals. You see more of, you go to the Q Continuum in Voyager, where one of the Q wants to be executed.
I was going to say, wasn't there an episode where one was in jail or something like that?
Yes. But as far as I see, there's no, all the Q are equally omniscient and omnipotent. So when they want to imprison a Q, or when they want to take away John Delancey Q's powers, they all need to act to do it, or they act to give it back. So no Q is supposed to be more powerful than any other Q.
Okay. But
supposed to.
Yeah.
Because I remember the one from Voyager where it was a guy who just, he got too involved because he did things like bump the tree that dropped the apple on Isaac Newton's head, and he helped the one guy make sure Woodstock went through, and
he was trying to shake stuff up. He says, after billions of years, I'm bored, I want to die. And it'll shake the Continuum up.
Oh, okay.
But in that, in Encounter at Farpoint, he's basically like an intergalactic policeman. He's going to put humanity back into their solar system because they're too far. They've gone too far.
And never let them out again, yeah.
Right. In Hiding Q, he's just a trickster. He's just there to be a trickster. When Q takes them to Sherwood Forest, he's trying to repay a debt to Picard.
That's not one of the episodes we're doing, is it?
No. That's great, though, where Worf smashes the mandolin and then says, "I am not a merry man."
Captain, I must protest. I am not a merry man.
Oh, wow.
It's a funny episode, but it makes no sense here. This is very, very petty. Q is just wants to repay Picard by showing him the folly of love, and then he falls in love with Vash. You're an omnipotent being, and you're falling in love with a human.
Who's Vash?
That was this smuggler archaeologist that Picard falls for when he meets her on Ryza in a season 3 episode, and then she shows back up in season 4. but Picard is embarrassed of her and doesn't want his crew to know that he fell in love on Risa and pretends he doesn't know her. But this is Trickster Q, and these are the iterations that people don't like. He shows up on Deep Space Nine. His one episode on Deep Space Nine, he fist fights Sisko, but he's there because Vash has left him, and he's hurt and jealous, and is trying to win her back. This just, like, makes no sense. Here's an omnipotent god being laid low over a mortal human being done with him. And then it's petty, because he shows her how much he protected her and reduces her to being diseased and malfigured, and then restores it to her. But sometimes they really miscarried this character. I would say that if you like Q, stop watching After All Good Things, because the Deep Space Nine episode is terrible, and everything they do in Voyager just ruins the character from that point on. To the point where at one point they're fighting a Q war with, he makes them see it as they can see it, with Civil War weapons, but the crew can get one of these Civil War muskets and kill a Q.
Well, that's the problem when you escalate too far. You can't, you eventually, someone's going to bring up, it's just like with the Borg. We've made this enemy that's, you know, we could have stopped in DS at First Contact, but no, let's drag this back out and create Species 8472. Yep.
But before, I'm going down a rabbit hole. Before we get too far, there's different roles of Q. This one, to me, is where Q is portrayed best in the series and written best. It's where he's in his guide and cosmic force role.
And trickster.
Yeah, but he's not really tricking Picard here. He's trying to teach him something. He's trying to enlighten him on something of the human condition and open doors in his mind. The same thing he does in All Good Things. The same thing he kind of did in Encounter at Farpoint.
There's that word term again, human condition. Whenever we talk Star Trek, Scott, this isn't a slam. It's just...
It's your drinking game.
It's your drinking game. Yep. Whenever we talk Star Trek, it's the Where's Waldo of sci-fi malady. When we talk about Star Trek, where does Scott say human condition?
Well, the whole thing is a human condition.
Yeah. Oh, right, True Q is another episode where you see the caring side of Q, that he's not this trickster, that he's not Loki. There's a purpose and a method to what he's doing. But this is where he's going to, you know, he's a guide to Picard, and it shows a little bit of a friendship. And I think that's, you know, one of the reasons, you know, this is the best role of Q. Let's kick this off here. I mean, this is where the brunt of this episode is going to be. So 20 minutes in, let's kick it off. The main theme here, it's called Tapestry. And Picard is given a chance to go back and undo this moment in his life that he regrets. He tells Q that he didn't like the impulsive, rash young man that he was. And he feels that now is this seasoned, 50-something, middle-aged man, that if he could go back and relive his youth, he could put himself on a track to being successful faster and live a better life free of regrets.
It sounds a lot like It's a Wonderful Life, basically.
This has been really compared to A Wonderful Life. And A Christmas Carol.
It's also a midlife crisis type thing.
Yeah.
Because even though we're talking about a guy who looks like he's 80 going in midlife crisis, but hey, it's that bit where you... Everyone has that bit where you look back and say, if I did this differently, my life would be better. Is that always the case? This is what this asked. And in some ways, I think answered very well. But because it does give him the chance to actually change what he says, or at least thinks, is wrong in his life.
Yeah, you know, Q tells him, you know, if this moment here, getting stabbed through the heart, is going to make you die earlier than you should have died. And he says, Picard says, things would be different. And he's going to, and what he finds out, as soon as he gets there, he tries to start making changes. He tries to start acting like a 50-year-old man instead of the 19-year-old or 22-year-old kid fresh out of the academy that he's supposed to be.
Even though he says he's not going to do anything differently, he says, I refuse to change. But then, almost immediately, he, again, changes things. It's like, you're not acting the same.
Well, once Q tells him that it'll have no impact on the future and it'll only impact him, he agrees to go back and play Q's game so he doesn't die. Because Q has to threaten him. He says, then you die on the table and we spend eternity together. And Picard's like, oh, God.
Oh, never mind.
Okay.
okay, let me die and not spend eternity with you. Okay, we can try.
You know,
don't send me to my personal hell.
You know, this is interesting because I don't know if, yeah, this is part of the main point. I was reading a blurb from Stan Lee talking about how people, and this was back in 1980 something, where he talks about how older people complain, what's with the younger generation? What's with the younger generation? I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done that. And he makes the point to say, you sure about that? The environment's changed, not the people. Maybe you wouldn't have made exactly that decision, but you would have done something brash possibly. And it's almost, and I don't think they intended it this way, but we can mention here that as an older person, we could tell a younger person, well, that was stupid. I would have never done that. Really, though? You sure about that? Consider what you did and think back to what you did and take that person and put them in today. So I can sit here and say that I never would have used my phone as much. Or would have relied on my phone. I would never have done that. Okay, suddenly put me as a 15-year-old. Like, I was born 15 years ago, 2004. And tell me that I wouldn't have done the same thing as them. That's ridiculous. The idea is we could sit here and pretend that, oh, no, I would have done the right thing. And you could put us back in time and have us act as we would today. But then, well, either A, our lives would have been fundamentally different. We probably wouldn't have been happy. Or B, we would have made the same mistakes anyway as someone we're accusing a younger person because now we're in their position. It reminds me of the story. Oh, boy, I wish I remembered it. But it was a story about a guy, a doctor who brought in some old people, an old retired politician, some other guy and an old woman, and he showed him the water from the Fountain of Youth and said, go ahead and drink. I want to see if it works. And they did, and they all got really young. And the girl, she just immediately started taking off the older clothes. She didn't get naked, but she basically tried to get down to something more alluring. The political guy got up, started making speeches and wanting to go back to that. They all just started carrying on like they did when they were younger. And then eventually the effects wore off and they were like, well, give us more. And he's like, no, you were all horrible people. That's why I brought you in. I wanted to see if you actually learned. And this is a little bit different, though. This is Q almost saying, you made those mistakes, but they made you better. Would you go back and try to fix it? Because you did, and look what happened.
And Q hides the hook, though. He doesn't right. Let Picard know how it's going to change him.
So I guess what I'm trying to say here is, this is a nice episode to say, we can say, well, I would never do that. But would you really? Would you really go back and find the young person that you were and say to yourself, I would go back if I would change it. I would change it. Yeah, there might be a few decisions. Might. But at the same time, like right now, if you could put me back into 20-year-old Rage Master, the way I acted with my then fiance would have been very different. And we probably would have gotten married. We definitely would have gotten married. But then I could look back and realize, wow, everything I did after that I'm glad I did wouldn't have happened.
I can tell you, no. You put me back. Look, there's a lot of things I wish I did differently 20 years ago. But as a man who's almost 40, look, I regret a lot of things I did with my temper, losing control of my temper, screaming, yelling, you know, a lot of things I wish I'd have done differently.
Happened a couple days ago, right?
Happened a couple days ago as a 39-year-old man. So I'm telling you, if with my hormone levels decreased at 39, I still, and wisdom and experience, I still spout off and lose my temper and throw spectacular fits and challenge 7 people to a fight.
I shouted, because
they parked too close to my car.
I called my snowblower useless today, and like it was going to do something.
And if I can't control that now, how would I have a chance if you put me back in a 20-year-old body with the hormones raging of a 20-year-old controlling my temper?
Well, so yeah.
It just, you still make the same mistakes.
Well, the mistakes you make, well, this is the thing, and I'm kind of what I want to bring up is that what we experience is what makes us who we are now, but what we are also our experiences.
Yes.
Because without those experiences, obviously we don't develop the same way. We develop completely differently. And because of that, you then have this weird effect, almost. That means there is neuroplasticity, is I think the term for it, is the development of the brain and how it changes over time and things like that. It's normally used for like medical terms of like someone losing some function of the brain. Neuroplasticity allows it to develop back to where it was, but it's also the development over time of the brain. It's like you have this bit of you that, you know, your anger or something, and yeah, it's there, but something might affect you that will change it. I mean, I could go back to when I was younger. I mean, there's probably a million things that if I really think about it and go, I wish that I didn't do that, or I wish I didn't do that. But I also know it's what made me me. I mean, getting in that one fight. Yeah, I probably shouldn't have gotten into that fight, but it also developed me into who I am. Because like, I decided to stand up at that point and throw that punch. I probably shouldn't, because I got in a lot of trouble for that, but it made me me. And if I go back as me, it's not me, because that's a different thing. And if I go through life again with what is then, it's that whole time loop thing. If you go back in time with what you know now, you do everything differently, which means the new you isn't you.
Exactly. And in this case, Q has created this scenario where Picard is free of consequences. But you watch what starts happening when he comes back to address this with the maturity of life. He loses Corton Zeller as a friend. That's done. He's damaged that relationship. Yeah. Then he acts on a regret that he never had a relationship with Marta, and that he never converted his platonic friendship into more.
Oh, right, a romantic friendship.
And he finds out the next day that he was right as a young man not to do that, because it is ruined. And Q tells him, you've lost two friends. You've had a drink thrown in your face. He, you know, these actions that you think, you know, the right actions for the right time in your life. And sometimes the regrets, you don't correct them. But Q says it at the end. He never had a brush with death. His life never came into focus, and he never started taking risks. And some, you know, this brush with death kind of makes you realize that life isn't forever, and no matter how safe you want to play it, you can't. You're going to die. So it's better to take the risks, to live the life you want to be the person that you are. I mean, that's the revelation that Picard comes to at the end of this.
He says,
I'd rather die as the man I was than live a little longer in this safe and boring life. The Picard that comes out of Tapestry is a radically different man. He's bouncing around. He has no sense of urgency because he never had a brush with death. He always thinks there's going to be a tomorrow.
Well, yeah, there's definitely that, but there's definitely the thing of with, again, as youth, we always are more rash and more, well, let's be honest, stupid.
Well, yeah.
And I think there's definitely something to be said that when you are younger, it's a good time to be rash and stupid. Because being rash and stupid, you can kind of bounce back from it a little easier. I'm physically, mentally, you know, career-wise, everything. As you're young, you can bounce back from that, but you can learn from it. And if you don't do those things, you never learn from it. So when you are young, you do the stupid, you do the rash, you do all that stuff, and you learn, so that when you reach the points when you can't really bounce back from it, you've already learned it, and you don't have to do the stupid Or at least you should limit the stupid and the rash.
You know, there's a... I can relate this to my own life in certain ways this episode. I completely tanked my career around the time I was 29 years old. I had, you know, I had got an opportunity, and I took that opportunity because up until that point, I had never really failed. I've been able to take a risk and in my career rise to that occasion. I took a lot for granted, and at 28, 29, I always figured that my career would be an endlessly upward arcing graph like you do in your 20s. And I fell flat in my face. And I had all the excuses in the world at that point why I was falling flat in my face. But the truth of the matter was, I just wasn't ready for the extra responsibility, and I just wasn't doing the quality work I needed to. And I ended up getting demoted into an entry-level position, and then the company ended up laying a bunch of people off, and I found myself back at the company that I started for, essentially, 10 years ago, in an assistance job to someone who I had been an assistant for 10 years ago and had then been promoted beyond that person. And for a while, I sulked. I was pretty depressed. I went backwards. I'd lost like 25% of my income, and I was trying to figure some stuff out. And then eventually, I had to learn from that, that the next time there's an opportunity in front of you, you don't take it for granted. You don't assume that you're going to be able to handle it. And from that point on, I started trying to claw my way back and forward and to get regain what I had lost. But what I had learned in that moment was that every opportunity is a chance for failure. And that if you don't give it everything you have, you can go backwards. And, you know, it wasn't just one lesson. I had to continue to learn that. Because then once I got back and exceeded from where I had fallen, then I lived completely paranoid about falling again. And it's a continual lesson. And that's part of that tapestry. I would love to go back and do things differently in 2007, 2008, 2009, not drink as much, not take my career for granted, make some wiser financial investments and decisions, but
it's best not.
That 3 or 4 years, as they say at the Empicard, said I pulled at one of those threads and it unraveled the tapestry of my life. Those changed me as a person, and then I changed again as a person later in 2016, and there were things that made me, you know, move in a different path there, but I had to go through that, had to hit that rock bottom, had to have that fall before I learned how to take some more risks, but to not assume that those risks will pan out, and how to be more decisive and how to be unafraid of failure and falling backwards. And it took some time. It really did. And I'm still learning, and I'll still be learning until the day I die. But if I go back and unravel that thread from 2006, 2007, make different choices, it's a different path, and it's probably not the path I want to be on.
Well, it's a good chance it's not the path you want to be on, because you wouldn't have learned that lesson. And it's, how do I phrase this? A lesson that, well, every lesson you learn is a lesson you need to learn, because it improves you. Now, sometimes, I'll be honest, sometimes those lessons are painful and really, really, really suck to learn. But it's still something you've learned. And it's movement forwards.
So what is the lesson here, though? This is kind of weird. So, you know, a little less serious here. Me moving away from the deep meaning. The fundamental defining moment of Picard's life is starting a bar fight with three Nausicaans and getting stabbed through the heart with a foot-long sword. So what they're not trying to tell you in this episode is to go embrace death and be unafraid to die.
I sure hope they're not trying that one.
But they're trying to tell you that what you learn from this horrible mistake, you know, is to seize the moment. Q says that in his end speech, and Delancey calls it one of his favorite moments in Star Trek, one of the best speeches he was ever able to give. He says, it brings your life into focus. It made you realize that you have to seize the opportunity in the moment, that you can't have 52 plans going on. Guilty of that, Scott. and then never pressing forward on any of them. I'll get to America Asunder one day, right after I start the Catch Driver podcast.
I forgot you were doing that.
That's because he's not.
You have to seize that moment, and he says it brings your life into focus and make you realize what's important, what you want, and that you don't have an endless amount of time. That eventually, if you wait too long, you will run out of time, and everything will have passed you by, and you'll be an old man running a report to your superior, wishing that you had a more interesting life if you wait too long.
Well, absolutely. And you're right. You have to grasp the moment. You can't live in the past. You can't live with regret in some ways. And I think that might be what they're trying to say, is just live in the moment. Don't regret the past. Learn from the past.
Right. Use it as a prod to move forward.
Yeah, I would say even, you know, that was, I guess, Scott's secondary question here. Is it better to play it safe or live the life that's full, even if it winds up being short? And I think even as a Christian, I would say it's not to play it safe, because Christians are not called to play it safe. You are not here to make sure that you get the big promotion and have the nice safe house and do all that, because the moment you do that, you're complacent and worthless. I mean, really, if all you're worried about is making sure you get the house, the kids, and the 1950s prosperity, you're like that one song. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of it. Ordinary Average Guys.
Oh yeah.
We are ordinary average guys with average kids and average wives.
Oh yeah.
We all live ordinary average lives. My friends,
Joe Walsh.
My friends are all boring, and so am I. It's like, yeah, that's not what we're supposed to do. And that doesn't mean that everyone's going to be doing the exciting thing as Picard.
Yeah, but it's hard to leave when you can't find the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever that means.
I go to parties sometimes until 4.
Oh.
Yeah.
So
I got me an office called Records on the Wall.
This is a song I don't know, so I'm just going to...
It's the same song.
It's later.
No, it's... Is it?
Yeah, that's Ordinary Average Guys by Joe Walsh.
Okay, apparently I haven't heard that part of the song.
Man, you gotta re-listen to that.
Well,
now
they cut it off, I guess, early. I've never heard the studio version. I heard the radio version.
The radio version.
Man, you...
No, it's they cut it the whole
just
time.
Just an ordinary average guy living ordinary average lives.
Yeah, but then it's just him talking about going to the bowling alley and then working in the yard, and that's it. That's the radio version. They don't say anything about record albums.
Welcome to the Joe Walsh podcast. I'm going to have to re-listen this because maybe I'm wrong.
No, you might be right. It could be the studio version. The radio sometimes tweaks that. But anyway, you know, I have a question too. So getting with this, is this kind of a know your role? We kind of do need the boring guy, because when Picard's talking to Riker, and he's the junior officer, and he's asking for the promotion, and Riker says, "Well, you're competent, you're punctual, you're all these things, but well, really, he kind of basically tells him you're boring and you've never done anything worthy of that kind of merit to be a captain." And then he also throws in, "Now don't misunderstand me. We want you and need you here. We don't want to lose you.
Steady Eddie. We need a whole group of people like you peeling potatoes. Because the potatoes got
to
get peeled."
Well, because it comes down to, we need someone to set up the chairs. Okay. We do need that. We need someone to clean the bathrooms. So is this also kind of a, I know it's not mentioned that way, but could we throw that in there for our own discussion? I know that's not what the writers intended, so I'm not going to jam it in there because I don't believe in that. But is there a know your role? Do we need boring people? Because, yeah, you do need people to clean the bathrooms.
Oh, yeah,
you do need the guy that sets up the chairs. You do need the woman.
Well, who wants to be that guy?
Well, exactly. But you need that. If suddenly all the sewage workers stopped doing their job and decided to become YouTubers, we're up crap creek, literally.
I think it's a really funny juxtaposition there, too, because Riker is usually the guy who's a dick, and he's the nice guy, and Troy's usually the overly nice, and she's really cutting there. She goes, "Hasn't that always been the problem?"
I guess so. Well, I mean, it is a different timeline, but that's the point, though. It's... You do need, because we have this problem now where everyone wants to go out and be a famous YouTuber. It's like, you got to know your station. Not everyone's going to nail it. Not everyone's going to wind up being James Rolfe.
Right. I don't want to be a famous YouTuber. I want to be a famous podcaster.
And by the way, yeah, right. James Rolfe, I should say, has training in filmography. So at least it makes sense why he's where he is.
Yeah, those guys should just be doing TV. They should be off YouTube. That's for us. It's for the amateurs. Have your own thing. Stop elbowing us out.
Are you... like,
leave me my podcast.
Are you missing
Joe Rogan?
I think you're missing my point. My point is just that it makes sense why he went in that direction.
Oh, I understand your point entirely.
He's making fun of you.
No, I'm making fun of myself.
Fun of... okay. Yes, I'm sorry.
But I'm just saying that...
he's trying to make a jest out of it.
There's a lot of people that want to do that, and they're the people that, hello, this is my first video. Sorry if it's not so good. All right, you've already lost. Goodbye.
Who's Buckley's character that does that?
Jason's Japinions.
Yeah, Jason's Japinions.
Yeah, and that's the problem that... you do need, though, the boring guy. You do need the person that's cleaning up and making sure the boilers work and pave the streets. And have I mentioned sewage workers? We really need them. You get rid of them. You get rid of...
in the 24th century, people don't poop.
You get rid of people... apparently not. You get rid of people like a Hollywood movie star. We'll live. We'll just find another one. You get rid of all the sewage workers, we got a big problem. Huge problem. Really big problem. Society is going to have a problem. Whereas, Tom Cruise didn't make Mission Impossible 10. What are we going to do?
Well, this is also kind of why we pay some of those employees quite a bit, like garbage collectors and power line workers. Because, your job is kind of important.
It's vital.
Yeah, we look down on them like, they're a garbage collector. But they get paid well.
Yeah, stop having them do their job for a month, and then you'll turn around and be like, okay, sorry. Sorry
exactly.
About that. Sorry.
Who can train your trash, change your trash can?
The garbage I don't mind can. At all. Who can clean me up before the big policeman's ball? The garbage man can.
Listen, by all means, if you want a competent public servant, vote for me. If you want to believe crazy promises about garbage men
collection
mowing your 24, lawn.
24-7, around-the-clock garbage collection.
Then vote for this idiot.
And they did. And then when he came back at the end.
Welcome to the Simpsons.
You're all screwed. Goodbye.
Last thing I want to talk about here. It goes back to Q. And Picard asked this question. Did he really send him back in the past to relive his past? Or did Q just create a pocket reality that is a dream in Picard's head to show him what could have been?
Or was this a fevered moment of, him dying?
Or was it a near-death experience that Picard's dying brain created? I'm going to say that it was Q, and that it was not really back in the past. That Q just, with his omnipotent powers, created a pocket reality for Picard to experience and live in. But it doesn't matter either.
I was going to say, it doesn't matter.
It's an irrelevant question, but it's... so why did I bring it up? But ultimately, Picard asked the question. And I think that's where you got to look at it. I think clearly the only way to meet Picard's conditions of going through with this was to make it a pocket reality that has no impact on the main reality. It's a Dorf. Dorf, what do you think? It's definitely a Dork Henderson question.
Well, clearly this was a pocket dimension created by Jean-Luc Picard's death. You see, what happens is that Jean-Luc, he was dying, but he wasn't quite dead. So in a fever dream, he took Jean-Luc Picard, who doesn't have a soul because it's Star Trek and those things don't exist, and he took him into a pocket dimension. He kind of hijacked his near-death hallucination. That's what's happened.
Thank you, Dorf.
Now go back.
It's the most right thing you're going to say. You can't even get my name right half the time, idiot.
The Hot Pockets are in the microwave.
Yes, lots of Hot Pockets down the hall. And Captain Janeway in a bikini. Oh, wait, that's not a good thing.
Yeah!
Don't tell him that. Let him imagine that, and we'll be fine for the rest of the episode.
All right, let's rate this thing and get out of here, because I think we're about out of things to talk about. I thought there'd be more to talk about in this episode, but really, it's
but
an
on-the-nose
It's so straightforward.
I mean, there's not a lot to... It's not like we have to sit there and parse it out. This isn't a Chris Nolan thing.
All right, I'm going to start it. It's, you know, I put it as my third favorite episode out of the entire Next Generation series. It's one that as I get older grows on me because I can relate to it more. And I think as I continue to get older, I'll relate to it more and like it. To me, it's another 9.5 out of 10. It's a fantastic episode where you see John DeLancey at the height of his acting prowess, Patrick Stewart at the height of his acting ability. And it's an episode that can really only work in the sixth season because it took time for the actors to have a full command and grasp of their character. They have been doing it long enough to understand it and to, and the interaction between them working together is at its height here. I don't think you see Q and Picard and Stewart and DeLancey ever act again on this level. All Good Things is great, but this is the height of it, you know? Everything that happens with Q after this in Voyager is a mistake, and it's not John DeLancey's fault. He does his best, but ultimately, watch this one, True Q, and All Good Things, and then, honestly, everything that happens after this character is bad. This is the high watermark for Q. Fantastic episode, and it's got a great humanist message to it. It's got a great exploration of what it means to be a human and our lives and how our past forms our future and that we aren't who we are sometimes without our greatest mistakes and how we're more than that. It's a wonderful episode of science fiction.
I would agree. I would probably give it a 9 for the messages that it portrays. To me, is definitely the big part of this. I mean, just for the message, I have to give it a huge and very high rating. And again, the acting is excellent. Everything in this is excellent. So I can definitely see why you picked this to put in the top 4 of Trekking Back in the New Year this year. Because it is an excellent episode.
It also is very good with the humor.
Yes.
Star Trek isn't always good when it tries to be funny. But this episode is... It's very, very funny throughout all of it, you know?
The other good humor moment will always be Data in Generations. He just, I don't know. He, for some reason, everything he does after he gets that humor chip, until he has regret.
Forms, you precious little life forms. Where are you? Data.
And then after he, Data, will you scan for life forms? Of course I will. I love scanning for life forms. And then when he's drinking, I'm having a sensation. It's fantastic. No.
It's
you
revolting.
Love it? No. You hate it? Yes. I hate this.
This is revolting.
Would you like another? Yes, please. So, yeah. Anywho, I'm going to give this a 10. The writing was solid. There weren't really any holes in it. It achieved what it set out to achieve. It had its beginning, middle, end, and it kept the core of the show together. It really did show us the heroes that we have, and it also gave us an insight into ourselves. And John DeLancey just, again, proved that he knows what he's doing with this character, and it kind of makes me worried about what's coming with Star Trek, because... You have people who say that, oh, Picard's my captain, but do you really know how to write them?
Does Patrick Stewart know how to write
exactly.
him?
Exactly. You've changed. You've changed Patrick Stewart. You're and that's okay. I expect you to. But that doesn't mean, in the same way that if you told me to make a Star Wars roleplay adventure like I did when I was in seventh grade, I can't do it. I can't. I'm not a seventh grader anymore. I've moved past that. I can't just gloss over things. And I think that him and Rob Kurtzman and all those guys, they can watch episodes like these all they want, but that doesn't mean they know what they're doing. And I know I'm getting on a soapbox here, but I could watch a bunch of shows about how to cook. That doesn't make me a good cook.
Well, here's the thing. Patrick Stewart read lines written for him by a writer's room. Someone that included else. Ronald D. Moore, Michael Piller. You know, you had a bunch of people who wrote that character and
knew
made
and
sure
it.
That it sounded correct, and they wrote that character over 7 years. Patrick Stewart delivered it, but he didn't write that character. So it's
right.
going to be interesting what happens here, because people who wrote Picard and truly understood that character aren't involved in this.
Right.
And
so,
that sounds sacrilegious to say Patrick Stewart doesn't understand it, but nope. More on that. There's a supplemental coming up. I'm going to try to really enjoy Picard and take the series for what it is and judge it on its own merits.
Well,
I'm concerned over what version, if we're going to get the hopeful, optimistic future version of Next Generation we're supposed to get, where humanity has solved all of its failings, or if we're going to see something that shows that everything we saw in Next Generation was an illusion beneath a thin candy shell that was yeah. rotten.
Well, I mean, it's the Prime universe, so it's not canon, so it's not Next Gen. But I would say, maybe it's, I'm jumping the gun here, but they added Legolas, the one Vulcan with a, it's not a sword, it's a stick, but still, it's like, Are we adding elves now? Is that what this is? We've changed our Vulcans to elves? Anyway. But no, this I'd give a 10 because it's solid. The writing is solid. It's in line with what they were going to do. And it was enjoyable from start to finish for me. So.
All right. If you've got comments, leave them for us at our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com. I'm not going to go through the inactive social media accounts at this point.
Pointless.
Rate us 5 stars on iTunes. If you don't like us, don't rate us. Rage Master, what's left for them to do?
Stay sick, sickies.